Ta-da! Okay, so enough of that. Tonight we're going to turn to more general topic, I guess. Not the extremes of having a lot of money or having not enough money, but more directly on working with money. And as you can see, there's three here, though you might argue for a couple more because they would use the term bribery. But there are three that deal with using money in a manner that is untoward, in a manner that is evil and ought not so to be. I would recommend that you, at chapter 15 and verse 27, make that list right there. There's only three on the topic, but the first of these, as you can see, is in chapter 15. So in chapter 15 and verse 27, he who profits illicitly troubles his own house, but he who hates bribes will live. Now, how do you define bribery? What is a bribe? It's pretty simple, isn't it? Oh, might be deeper than we thought.
Well, it's where somebody is given money or favor for doing something that is usually against the law, or something that is just to their favor in opposition to somebody else's.
Okay, yeah, and I love that she added at the end there, you know, in opposition to somebody else, or in the first part of the definition there, that was actually illegal. Illicit is the term, which means exactly the same thing that I have in the New American Standard, maybe actually have illegal there in one of the other translations. But in 15:27, this idea is large. It's a bad thing. And it would be a sin if you try to buy somebody off to another person's detriment or in order to get favor for yourself that is illegal, that actually would be a crime or a sin. That would be bad. But when I couch it in those terms, its badness only extends to me. I did this thing. I committed a sin. God, you know, is going to be unhappy with me. That'd be bad enough. But what does this proverb say? What is this saying about the badness?
It goes into your household.
That's right. That this thing radiates out. It is a larger problem than just how it reflects or impacts you. It will impact your family. It will impact your household. And bear in mind, brethren, that in the Old Testament especially, this word house takes on some meanings that we don't usually associate, you know, ourselves here in the United States of America. Now, first off, here today, very few of us would have servants. But in the Old Testament times, New Testaments as well, now, I don't know if I'd say it was more common, but that you have quite a few households that do have servants. And when you trouble the house, you're not just troubling your immediate family, the husband, the wife, the children. You're frequently going to be troubling then maybe a large number of people who had collected themselves around this individual, maybe more kind of in the sense of being a business owner than most of us would be, you know, handling today. But in that tribal system, in that particular culture of the time, you know, you have tribes that are gathering. And a household then is larger than just the immediate generation. It radiates out, and it gets so big that you then have the term house of Israel, and it impacts the entire nation. And so that use of the term house can be really very broad. And as a matter of fact, when we get into this study, and one that will follow here later with regard to Kings, you do have an impact in your personal behavior that stretches far beyond just you. It will have an impact on your family. Now, I haven't paid much attention to it at all. I don't even know what the deal is. I don't know that bribery is involved. But I've been listening all my life to the name Jesse Jackson. Have you? Okay. And now, in the second generation, Jesse's senior's son is apparently going to be going to prison, and that because he's been misappropriating funds. Now, I want to be careful because I don't remember reading anything about bribery, and I haven't read hardly anything about it at all, other than apparently he just took some money that, you know, shouldn't be used for other purposes. But how do you suppose his wife feels about it now? Pardon me? Then she feels really bad about it. See, it shows you how much I've been paying attention to that story. Today I saw a picture, just one picture of some, you know, function that was going on, and Jesse Jackson Sr. was kind of in the background, and he had just the most awful look on his face, just, you know, a troubled man. All I can see in it, you know, here he was trying to put on the totally persona and be involved in some kind of rally kind of a thing, and yet what he got in his mind, knows his boy is going to jail, and apparently the wife is too, but presuming that the family was innocent, which apparently is not in this case, you know, you're troubling your entire household, you're destroying just everything, and if each of us could remember that, brethren, you're going to find that's a theme throughout the Bible, not just in Proverbs. When David committed his sin with Bathsheba, who got hit? Okay, well, Bathsheba loses the child, okay, and then what was the punishment for David's sin? Two people got together, commit the very personal and private sin you would think. They then are called out by Nathan and God, see, and what then is the actual penalty? Remember the phrase?
Members of his own household would rise up against him.
That's correct. Now, there's kind of a vision or a picture that sort of covers all of it. That's exactly right, but I'm looking for something very specific. It said something about his house. Okay, and what was the exact term? And that's it. But the sword will never depart from your house. And what was the rest of David's life like? It's just endless warfare. And how many people died? Apparently, brethren, by the tens of thousands, Israelites would die in the remainder of David's life. Because that city would be torn apart with rebellion, an attempt to usurp the throne, going to have all sorts of problems in David's immediate family that are going to cause civil war. And many's the time I've sat and just thought about that. What did these people do? Why did they have to suffer like this? And for me it's imponderable. I think for most people it's imponderable. But it's quite the life lesson for all of us to remember that everywhere you go and everything you do, even when it is as private as you think anything could ever get, still your behavior is viewed by God as being a family affair. You're the head of that family, and whether you're the husband or the wife, you are, you know, those two that are responsible. And what you do can have absolutely catastrophic and devastating results for several generations to come. And that's the point that I see in, you know, this particular proverb. He who profits illicitly troubles his own house, but he who hates bribes will live, which then, you know, it gives you the suggestion that you're troubling your house up to and including what? Death itself. Your behavior here can be fatal. Well, but it was only a few bucks. You can minimize it, you know, all you like. God isn't going to put, you know, any kind of levels that I can see on it. He just says, you hate bribery. And by the way, please turn over to Luke chapter 16, because this came up, and I forget, and I apologize, because I can't remember all the various people and conversations I have, you know, in the course of the week, but I was talking with somebody on Sunday, and this passage came up. In Luke chapter 16, it's one of those refrigerator, you know, verse passages that it really just ought to be a guiding light for us always. It's one of those that encompasses just so much, so that, you know, you really want to put it high on your list. Is in Luke chapter 16, and here at verse 10. Single verse. He who is faithful in a very little thing is faithful also in much. And he who is unrighteous in a very little thing is unrighteous also in much.
Now that 10th verse is the one I have in mind. There's sort of an addition to that in verse 11. If therefore you've not been faithful in the use of unrighteous mammon, who will entrust the true riches to you? If you've not been faithful in the use of that which is another's, who will give you that which is your own? So verse 10's the point, but you've got what flows out of it in a judgment verse at 11 and 12. Now, did you notice how specific the scripture is right there? It's not even just a little thing, but it's what kind of a little thing? A very little thing. Ever told a little white lie? But as long as it's little and it's white, then what? Then you violated Luke 16 and you'll tell big ones too, won't you? You're on your way to Whopperville. It's what it is. Not good. And so remember that one in Luke 16:10, and we can apply it now over here in chapter 15 and verse 27 as well. But I want to read again at Luke 16:10. He who is faithful in a very little thing is faithful also in much. And he who is unrighteous in a very little thing is unrighteous also in much. When I was a brand new Christian, I'm not sure I'd even been a Christian a full year. I went to a very large congregation, one that we might characterize as being liberal, which is a pretty loose term and maybe nonsensical much of the time too, you know. But they had what they called a youth minister in this particular congregation. They were so huge they felt they had to hire a guy, you know, just to work with the younger ones. So they had this youth minister, and one day John and I went to the mall with him and several other people because we were all the same age. And so, you know, it's in mid-20s. And we go down to the mall, and while we're wandering through the mall there in Denver, Colorado, we saw, I think it was a 31-flavor skin, you know, so we all went over, and we bought an ice cream cone. Now, I was still in the midst of my first love, because I had only been a Christian for about a year, so I was still feeling things intensely. All right. But this guy, he had been a Christian many years longer than I had, and he had responsibility in the congregation where I had none, but I will never, ever forget him making a joke and laughing heartily about how silly it would be to offer prayer for a scoop of ice cream. Is that silly? I was just floored. He was just mocking the idea of our offering a prayer for an ice cream cone. Well, that may be a very little thing, however you would go ahead and line it up, but what did God tell us about our food? What is it by prayer? Sanctified by that prayer of thanksgiving. Okay? So a very little thing, it's just an ice cream cone. Rather honestly, I mean, if you're working through your day, you know, and considering the time of year, you get in, you know, along about 10 o'clock in the morning, and there's that Cadbury egg. Just one little bit of chocolate. Should you offer a prayer of thanks for that? That's a very little thing, isn't it? Not a whole meal. He that is faithful in that which is little, in a very little thing, will be what? Faithful also in that which is much. And if you're lackadaisical and negligent about it, if you're flippant, if it's funny, if you're unfaithful in a very little thing, then what? What are you? You're unfaithful. You're unfaithful. The degree is not going to matter so much to the Lord. Now, one little caveat on this. There are degrees of sin. There are degrees. He that delivered me up to you has the greater sin. The Lord recognized lesser sins and greater sins. You know, I'm fine with that. But in the end, all sin is what? All sin is sin. See, it's not up to us to start ranking them or try to excuse ourselves. So when it comes to bribery, exactly the same thing. And however large or small it is, if you've been doing something that is illicit, and that thing, then remember that that thing can have impact over your entire family. Everything that you hold dear, everything that you love. Yes?
Comes from two directions. It comes from the outside into your family, for your world representative and for your business and your space in the community. But when the servants in the household find out that you're willing to do something that's not legal, it affects their attitude. When the children find something out about their father, it affects their attitude towards life. And so it, from wherever it's affected, it collapses from the inside world from the outside world.
Carol's made a great point. It's not even just as I've been portraying it, that there can be, you know, dreadful consequences that are in the form of just disaster, you know, and punishment. But she's saying, you know, when you get discovered in these kinds of things, you have been disappointing your children and your mate. You are also influencing them as well, perhaps training them to do these same things. I've had my doubts about Jesse Jackson Sr. for a few years, haven't you? So, you know, maybe, at least, you know, I don't know, so I don't know, but here's a son, nonetheless, who may be a chip off the old block, huh? There's been some reason to think so. And so it's been taught, and it's been learned, and now it's being, you know, just horrifyingly destructive. So, 1527, an important passage to be, you know, thought of in larger terms than just the bribery itself, but the concern we need to have for everybody about us. Okay, chapter 17 and verse 23. A wicked man receives a bribe from the bosom to pervert the ways of justice. Now, this whole from the bosom thing is kind of like what this is depicting here on the screen. The idea is you come up, you get close to somebody, money is being passed, and the bodies are being used as a shield. It's not for everybody to see. It was done in some sort of an intimate and hidden manner. A wicked man does this. He receives a bribe from the bosom to pervert the ways of justice. Then I'm presuming that in this verse, he's trying to help us to understand that everything we do ought to be very forthright. It ought to be done out in public. That from the bosom part of this verse isn't, you know, just an accident, and it's not something to just be overlooked and forgotten. You do these things in this manner. And what follows here is the perversion of justice. So, I might have told you this story already. I can't remember it. It only takes me about 90 days before I start recycling all my stories. So I've been here now 7 months. You're already for that. But I am never going to forget one of the most profoundly important pieces of advice I ever got from an older preacher. And I don't think I'd even been a Christian for 2 years. But I was in that same church I was telling you about earlier in Colorado, and they had what they called, you know, very formally, a school of preaching. I'd moved across the country so I could be there and be a part of it. And one of the teachers in this school of preaching, he, you know, was telling the class one day, he said, okay, now you guys, if you think you want to preach, get ready. Everybody in the congregation at some time or another is going to come and bend your ear. And they're going to bring their gripes and complaints and the way things ought to be and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But he said, worst of them all is that they will bring you complaints about other people in the congregation. So he says, I've been doing this now, I forget if it was 30 or 40 years. And he said, I highly recommend you all do this. So you go down to the stationery store, get you one of these real small shirt pocket flip-over spiral-bound notepads. Get you, you know, just a few pages. Put it right there. And he said, every time somebody calls you into the office and they want to talk about somebody else, and they say to you, keep this under your hat or just between me and you or whatever, he said, all you have to do is you just pull that out and you flip it open and get your pencil out. Do like this. He said, then they will say, what are you doing? And you say, well, I'm going to take notes so I make sure I get it exactly right when I talk to them. What happens next? Conversation's over. Time to go for lunch. He said, it'd be just amazing how those conversations would be cut short if somebody thinks they have to be on the record. If it's in the bosom here in this verse, what is it? Off the record, isn't it? Yeah. What you're trying to say is off the record. If the money can change hands, then what? Then it ought to be able to change hands right here in front of everybody. It doesn't have to be done in the bosom. Okay? If it's going to pervert justice, then it has to be done like this. But justice which is a thing that is universal for everybody, is going to be, you know, part of our lives, then it'll be done openly, it'll be done properly, it'll be done without any fear of people being aware of it. So again, in 17 and 23, a wicked man receives a bribe from the bosom to pervert the ways of justice. Again,
obviously, there's a place for privacy. We're going to find out. He that utters his whole mind is a fool. So some things should be kept secret. That's fine. But by and large, when somebody comes to you and they've got some big secret that they want to unload on you, I'm spending out if I haven't before. I make it an absolute point of honor when people come and try to swear me to secrecy that I don't do it. I won't do it. Just tell them I can't do that. Okay? I recognize something should be kept private. I'll do the very best I can. But people make mistakes. I might make a mistake. And typically, it's better if you and I just keep everything, you know, on the table and above board. We can't talk about it like that. Maybe you need to sort it out first, and you can come and talk to me.
Brother, there's privacy. I'm not trying to cut off all counseling, you know, all the rest of that. But I'm just saying, you know, when somebody comes to you in this manner, then your antenna need to go up, and you start asking yourself, why the secrecy? Is this really necessary? And that could be your next question. All right, then why do you want to swear me to secrecy? What is it about this, you know, that has to be kept so private? Now, can you have good reasons? If they do, great. But they may not. And so if that's the case, then you got something else going on. Okay, 29.4 is the last of these on bribery. I'm going to say this. It's the last of these to use the word bribery in an evil manner. So 29.4. The king gives stability to the land by justice, but a man who takes bribes overthrows it. And remember I said earlier, when you're talking about the word house, you could start with just a mate and not even get to the kids, or you could expand that influence all the way out to the nation. If you're the king, and just about everything you do impacts what? It impacts the whole nation. You're the king. You're the figurehead and representative of that nation. You're the king. You're its provider and its protector. And in that culture, you are its ultimate and final judge and arbiter. You're the king. Now, if you're the king, then give stability to the land. Stability to a land. Another word for that is peace. Stability is when a nation is operating in a manner that you can depend on and that you like. Instability in a nation is never good, brethren. Not healthy, not helpful, not great. Raise your hand if you want to relive the 60s. No thanks. Well, not me. Now, if you didn't live through the 60s, be happy. Be really happy. It was an awful time. So much unrest. So much fighting. So much chaos. So much destruction. So much instability. Nobody knew from minute to minute when a riot wasn't going to break out. It was just awful. It seemed like there was smoke on the horizon everywhere you looked, every day you looked. It was just awful. Why? Well, a lot of factors will play into it. But Solomon, who is the king, wants us to understand that, and is telling his nation, I think, at this time, if you come into my court, then you know what? I'm not taking your bribes. I will give stability to this nation because I don't want to overthrow it. I will not accept bribes. He was serving notice, wasn't he? Okay? So should you in your life. People should expect that if they come to you, what they're going to meet is an individual that you can absolutely trust, that you can absolutely depend on, you can have absolute confidence that is unwavering and unchanging. They're not shifting like the sands of the sea or the winds and the waves and the clouds. They are solid kinds of people. And those people will preserve a nation. They're the salt, whether they occupy a king's position or even a lower one. Okay, now, any questions about bribery, the word used in this negative sense? We're going to see it again used in a positive sense now. Anybody on that? Okay, so here we go. Now we're going to look at this series of verses, several of which we've already seen. So we've got 30 minutes left in the class. There's no doubt we're going to finish the class here today on the topic of money. We're going to move on to some new things here next week. So here's your list. In a minute, you know, I'll erase it just so I can remember where I'm at, and we'll start going down one at a time here. But now we're going to look at gifts, which the Old Testament is also going to refer to as a bride. Only this time when the word is used, it's in a positive sense. It's in a healthy, wholesome sense. It's a good thing. So, here, sometimes, brethren, if you come bearing a gift, and it's in the bosom, it's surreptitious, and it's for an illicit thing, then it brings instability to the nation, it can affect your entire household, it's an absolutely devastating thing. You're dealing with a nuclear, you know, weapon here. It's bad. But you can also bring a gift. How? In an absolutely open and above board manner, and for the purpose only of demonstrating what? Love. Appreciation. Trying to show gratitude for what somebody has done. It's simply to, you know, express somehow you appreciate who they are and what they do. Now, I mentioned, it's hard for me to get used to this here in this congregation. I was never good at it. I'm going to have to learn how to get good at it. The way you people give cards to each other, this is awesome to me. It's like, do they have a second job or something so they can afford this? Those cards could be expensive. So I've been the recipient of so many cards, I can wallpaper a whole room with it already. I'm only there 7 months. And it's so great. An unsolicited expression of appreciation. I may get on board with that. But you know, I discovered it's amazing. It's something about you Oregonians, I think, too. My next door neighbor, who I don't know from the man in the moon, brought 2 heart-shaped chocolates over on Valentine's Day and left them on our porch. That was insane. I couldn't understand this. I'm from Washington. I don't do anything. What's the matter with you? Okay? So you're living in a culture, brethren, which is already, I think, healthier and better than the one I'm coming from. And it's been a little bit jarring for me. I've got to get up to speed on this. And it's so great, isn't it? Well, now we're going to talk about bribes in the form of giving somebody any small or large expression in a physical manner of your love and your appreciation. Now, I'm recommending, as always, that it'll be at the first verse listed, that you put the list that I have up on the screen there, so you build your own personal little concordance we talked about so much. So chapter 3 and verses 27 and 28 is where I put the list in my Bible. These two go together. Do not withhold good from those to whom it is due when it is in your power to do it. Do not say to your neighbor, go and come back, and tomorrow I'll give it. That's what doesn't use the word bribe. There's only a few that do as we go through the list. So, you know, just making a segue there. But, brethren, if somebody comes to you for help, when is the time to give it to them? Right there and then. Don't put off till tomorrow what do today. I believe that Abraham Lincoln and Benjamin Franklin. You know, I don't know who came up with that one. But what a great ethic that it is. If you have it, do not withhold it. And note again the way Solomon casts this. Do not withhold good from those to whom it is what? Solomon's viewing it like a debt. You owe this person. It is due to them. And if you have the power, do it. Do not say to your neighbor, go and come back, and tomorrow I'll give it. Don't do that. If you can, then do it now. Take care of it immediately. And by the way, I tell you a little secret of my own again and revealing all my failures once more. Whenever somebody comes to me and says, would you pray for me about thus and such? You can count on this. In the next 30 seconds, I will be praying for that person while I'm still talking to them. If it's humanly possible, I'm going to offer my first very brief and silent prayer right then. Do you know why? And don't say it so I can follow the advice of this verse. Because I'll forget if I don't do it. Right now. So first,
I need to get this thing going. It'll help me later as well. But right now, you come and ask me to pray, I want to do that right now. Is it within your power to pray with somebody? Well, I mean, unless you're falling out of the sky in that broken airplane, you probably, you can pray with anybody who comes and asks you right then before they leave your presence. Right.
I think it's definitely inspired him saying that because, I mean, it's not just forgetting, but humans have a tendency as time goes on, they just don't feel the importance to do it. So if you do it, you need to do it right away because we tend to not want to do it as much.
Amen. If it was important enough to the person who's asking, right then and there, then what? It ought to be important enough to us right then and there. Okay? Now, I don't think that this passage is dealing with prayer in particular, but as we've done with so many of these proverbs, you can see wider applications. You can see principles that lie behind these things. And just like the principle that you're impacting more than just yourself when you take a ride, you know, is this principle that there's a wider world out there now. And so if it's in your power, what you need to do is to respond immediately to the individual to whom it is due. Okay? Take care of it now. You say, well, you know, we're going to have a meeting in a week, or I'm going to call the family together, you know, we'll talk about all this. There's high probability that that is never going to happen. Or that if it does, as Michael's just pointed out, it will have lost its priority status. It's been slipping down to something you can put off, and it really should not. Okay, comment or question on that? Anybody? Right, chapter 11. First few pages there, verses 24, 25, and 26 in chapter 11. There is one who scatters, yet increases all the more. And there's one who withholds what is justly due. There's that word again. But it results only in want. The generous man will be prosperous, and he who waters will himself be watered. He who withholds grain, the people will curse him, but blessing will be on the head of him who sells it. You know, I've got a picture in my mind right now of a guy that I bumped into 2 days ago in downtown Eugene. Absolute total stranger. We only had maybe two or three sentences that passed between us. But this guy really impressed me. I found out in downtown Eugene, they got these things I don't like much at all. They're called parking meters. Seemed to be a bunch of them, too. So I pulled in to a parking meter. And I was sitting there, hadn't quite got out the door yet, when a guy comes walking down the sidewalk, and he comes up to my window. And he says, "Say, I'm in that car right in front of you right there, and I've got about 30 minutes on the meter. If you want to wait a second, I'm pulling out, and you can have mine."
Yeah, I've done that.
Good for you. I thought, wow, we're only talking about 50 cents here. 30 minutes was 50 cents. He that is faithful in that which is very little will be what?
Faithful
also in that which is much. Now read 24, 25, and 26. There's one who scatters yet increases all the more, and there's one who withholds what is justly due, but it results only in want. The generous man will be prosperous. This guy is being generous with 50 cents is all it was, but he was taking the time to go make a point for me. And he who waters will himself be watered. But he who withholds grain, the people will curse him. The blessing will be on the head of him who sells it. Now, harking back to the passage we just talked about, if you're withholding grain, what's the idea there?
Wait until the price goes up.
See? Something's going on where people are coming to you, and are you taking care of it right now? What are you saying? Bill got one picture, you know, it fits the bill perfectly. Come back tomorrow, you'll probably be hired. Come back tomorrow, it's better for me. No, don't do that. Don't do that. So here's three verses that they're essentially the same thing. But isn't it interesting? There's one who scatters, yet increases all the more. Now often, scattering can be a bad thing. But when a sower goes out to sow, what is he doing? Well, he's scattering seed, but he's doing it with a purpose. You know, he's spreading seed. So scattering can be a bad thing, or it can be a good thing. In this case, it's intended to be a good thing. So here he is. He's just giving everything he has away, and yet what? He just somehow keeps doing okay, doesn't he? So how is that? He gives it away, and more just keeps coming. But then there's one who withholds what is justly due, and what does that result in? Being miserly, brethren. How healthy is that? That is a real bad thing. Now, you might be in poverty, and we spent two nights on that. There were so many verses. Poverty is real. Poverty is not necessarily deserved. But what do you learn from the widow and her mite? How did she have? Whatever she had was very little. But she had learned to be generous even with that which was going to be very costly to her rather than giving out of her surplus. In 25, the generous man will be prosperous, and he who waters will himself be watered. He who withholds grain, the people will curse him. The blessing will be on the head of him who sells it. So we're not trying to stockpile stuff and have the biggest barns. Jesus gave us a parable on that. We're not trying, you know, to think in terms of some giant competition with everybody else, you know, and it's mine and all that. Christians are trying to fight the world. We're trying to resist this lust. We are trying to learn how to go against the flow, and most especially go against what is natural. And that kind of clinging and miserly, you know, clutching and grasping and collecting and hoarding, it's just not a healthy thing. It's not good for your mind. It's not good for your family. It's not good, ultimately, for anybody. You're not stupid. You're not just casting it to the wind. Talk about that, too. But the attitude should be magnanimous and generous and giving. And your first order of business would be to say, for you before me. Michael?
The reason why people that give freely tend to look like they're doing okay and things happen for them, because when they give, it's out of generosity, and that's a righteous act. People that keep things to themselves are actually putting their faith in the office, and they're saying, because I'm keeping this, this is what's going to make me feel better. And objects are always going to let you down, and they're always going to go away.
Amen. What? You never saw It's a Wonderful Life? What's this whole movie about? Got one thing, didn't you? And then in the end, when your turn comes, and in life, brethren, you've all probably seen it, it's just endless cycles and up and down like the waves of the sea. And you're going to occupy both ends of this spectrum probably sooner or later. And what goes around comes around. You've been generous when you have the means to give, and you give immediately when you have the means to give, and you give without strings when you have the means to give. Then when you have the need, what? You have made friends for yourself by the use of the unrighteous man.
Even Jesus said it is more blessed to give than receive.
There you go. The only verse we have that's a quote from Jesus in the book of Acts. As a matter of fact, it's more blessed to give than to receive. Amen. Okay, so on to chapter 14 and verse 31. Nope, that was a mistake. There we go, 14:31. Okay. He who oppresses the poor reproaches his maker, but he who is gracious to the needy honors him. Does that sound familiar? Was it better? We talked about it last week. Okay, so let's go to 17:8. That was only just last week. So 17:8, we'll see another one that's just like it, which we also did last week. 17:8. A bribe is a charm in the sight of its owner. Wherever he turns, he prospers. You kind of have to be careful with this one a little bit, because as a matter of fact, literally that says, a stone of favor. A bribe is a stone of favor. And I like the translation, charm. What is a lucky charm? Don't say it's a cereal. What is a charm? What is somebody who's charming? charismatic, magnetic, appealing. Okay? The idea of a charm is that here because I have this rabbit's foot, which didn't do him much good, but, you know, because I've got it, then what? Good things will come. Okay? Now, is Solomon superstitious? No. Does the Bible even allow it? No. Does the Bible expressly forbid it? Yes. Okay, Isaiah, for instance. Okay, fine. So we understand that. But now then, Solomon is wise enough and certainly permitted by God to be able to use this idea in this manner. A bribe is a charm. In other words, here's your word bribe being used in a good sense as a gift. It just works wonders, doesn't it? Just unseen, helpful. In the sight of its owner. Wherever he turns, what happens? He prospers.
Again, I really don't think he's saying that this is what the Jesse Jackson family, you know, is all about, that kind of stuff. He's already condemned using money illicitly and using it in a manner, you know, that's secret for bad purposes. But the fact of the matter is, brethren, how hard is it to be mad at somebody that just gave you a gift? It's tough, isn't it? And if they do it again and again, I mean, you might be just hard enough you can withstand that first.
What you give, you need that piece of pie. It's not that thing.
But if it keeps coming, what happens?
You saw
it. No kidding, it just breaks you all down and turns you into mush, doesn't it?
Sure it will. Sure it will.
And is that a bad thing or a good thing? That's a great and good thing. Okay? So, Jesus taught on the subject too. When brethren have strife, what should they do? Eagerly and quickly. See? Try and take care and resolve that. Saw a hand up here. Is it Jimmy, maybe?
It's mine, but it's not necessary because mine was negative. But you can give it to them and they just want more and more and more. And sometimes.
Excuse me, that's a great point. Yeah, when you are bribing people to do something good for you, what's the only reason they're doing good for you? You're paying for it. So what are they going to expect the next time? And Jimmy's pointing out, that's a never-ending story, isn't it? See, all you've done is just open the floodgates, you know, to your checkbook. Okay, so 17:8, one last time. A bribe is a charm in the sight of its owner. Wherever he turns, he prospers. So use properly a gift has influence, and it's healthy, and it's good. 18:16. A man's gift makes room for him and brings him before great men. This gift has a wide-ranging influence even as the illicit bribe did. So that you will find that its impact and its influence is greater than just this immediate thing too. You develop a reputation. You become well known for the kind of a person that you are. I can tell you something else about the way I'm reacting to living in Eugene. Compared to where Don and I have just come from, this community is so small. It's just tiny. And I find myself constantly thinking, you better be careful around here, because one misstep, and what do you do to your reputation? I'm on pins and needles trying to be a good guy. Not that word. But I find myself thinking, you know, if I was having an off day, anything, you know, that's quick like that, just a kind of harsh word, being short with somebody at the gas pump or whatever. You know? And then what? It just spreads. Okay? Reputations, brethren, are really important. Solomon's going to talk to us about it, especially in the book of Ecclesiastes. Careful.
This makes me think of some of the scandals in the White House that have been acclaimed, that people have been able to make campaign donations and be able to sleep in the Lincoln bedroom, etc.
Yeah, sure.
It's got a more negative content for me.
Yeah, isn't that terrible? The same thing has happened to me. That Lincoln bedroom, whenever I hear the phrase now, all I can think of is the bribery scandal we had some time back. You know, and that's it. Lincoln bedroom has come to be a negative term now. Well, it shouldn't be. It should be an honorable thing. And it's been sullied, you know, because of that.
Bill?
Along that same line, something I've seen not too long ago, a couple, maybe a couple of years ago, that there are very few congressmen that go to Washington that stay more than a couple of terms and don't come home millionaires. Yeah. And that's not their paycheck.
I've seen another Jimmy Stewart movie. Which one was that? Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. Okay. Let's press on here. I've got to get a run out of time. We don't have a whole lot. As I say, there's several that are overlapping, so let's go quickly here. 19:6. Many will entreat the favor of a generous man, and every man is a friend to him who gives gifts. Now, last week, did we see that in a negative sense? Your friends can be really shallow. So we did get some warnings about this. But could it also be a positive thing? If you develop the reputation for generosity, many will come to you. Well, you might be busier and you wish they wouldn't, you know, and all of that, but still it's a good reputation. And every man is a friend to him who gives gifts. Clearly, it was in a negative sense last week, but I don't think so in this verse. It does make a way. It is a good and healthy thing. Be generous with everybody, with total strangers, as I pointed out. Also in chapter 19, a little bit later there at 17. He who is gracious to a poor man lends to the Lord, he will repay him for his good deed. Sound familiar? Last Wednesday. Go on to chapter 21. 21:14. A gift in secret subdues anger, and a bribe in the bosom strong wrath. Now this is interesting. Because we've been talking about all this in the bosom and all this secret stuff, you know, and so far, it wasn't healthy, it wasn't good, it wasn't great. Now we see a gift in secret subdues anger, and a bribe in the bosom strong wrath. Let me tell you another story. I'm just full of mistakes.
Just make them all the time.
For 14 years, so I can continue preaching up in Washington, I also delivered the mail. And so I worked in five different routes and all kinds of stuff. You know, 14 years, you can't have a whole lot of experience. Well, I was a substitute carrier for all those 14 years. Never really had my own route. I was always working, you know, for somebody else to fill in for me. And I can't even remember what it was now, but I had been called in to substitute for somebody. And this woman was just furious with me the next day when I came in to work on somebody else's route. She came over and just read me a riot act. And I can't remember what it was. It was an honest mistake, you know, but I did something wrong. And she was having a bad day or whatever. And she really made a scene. Most of you probably not there in the post office, but the way it works there is that you can't say much without everybody hearing it. So when she came over and just blistered me, you know, the whole post office heard it. She just kind of laughed and got all upset. No, I felt bad. So I went down to the store, I bought a single rose, and I put it over on her desk to find when she got back from the route. Guess what happened? She blistered me again. She was enraged at me. She was furious with me. Why? Think of the verse. What had happened? No. She had made a scene. I just stood and took it. Then I gave her a very public gift where everybody could see this rose on her desk.
Oh, I embarrassed her.
I embarrassed her, didn't I? I didn't mean to. That was strike two. Okay. It was never strike three. I quit the post office. But you see, you've got to be careful. So in 21 and verse 14, a gift in secret subdues anger. When there's anger, if it's been a public thing like this, you know, then secret might be the better way to go, as long as it's not illicit. And a bribe in the bosom, strong wrath. I just perfectly violated that verse. Way to go. You're right. But I just never thought about it. Didn't know my Proverbs that well. Got myself in trouble. Okay? We finally made peace, by the way. Don't worry about it. Chapter 21, verses 25 and 26. The desire of the sluggard puts him to death, for his hands refuse to work. All day long, he's craving.
while the righteous gives and does not hold back. Now, those two verses are pretty self-evident, I guess. People that are selfish, their desire can kill them because they're lazy, too. So they want, they crave, and they long, and they hunger, but they don't work. And if that's the case, all day long crazing and refusing to work, see, well, eventually, we saw that earlier, you know, you're going to kill yourself. But then, the last part of 26, while the righteous gives and what? Doesn't hold back. What got Ananias and Sapphira in so much trouble? It wasn't just the holding back. What else? And then lying about it. Okay? So, they made, you know, two mistakes. I don't want to say two mistakes. It was theirs. They could have used it any way they wanted to. You know, it sounds like they could have used it better. You know, but they also lied about it. And so, what Solomon, the wealthiest guy on the planet, had learned, having all that, is how dangerous that having is, and then the spirit you need to inculcate so that you don't get yourself in trouble with the stuff, and instead have far-reaching, wide-ranging influence always for good. Right? Next verse is 22:9. He who is generous will be blessed, for he gives some of his food to the poor. Very closely akin to what we've already seen, and we've got only two to go, so I'll wrap them up at 28:27. Pardon me. 28:27. He who gives to the poor will never want, but he who shuts his eyes will have many curses. I think Solomon's trying to get us to understand, brethren, it'll be more than just the cursing of the poor that we didn't give to. Again, the ever-present caveat, I'm going to talk plenty about it, they're just scamming you, don't give them a nickel, if you won't work, neither let them eat. You know, all these things are true, but we're talking about our attitude now. Our attitude is to give to the poor, you'll never want. Shut your eyes to it, and all you're doing is raining curses down upon your head. So, let's close with 18:11, which is not directly on the subject, and it is one, first part, 11, rather than 12, we've already seen there. But these two verses say, a rich man's wealth is his strong city, and like a high wall in his own imagination. We saw other passages about riches a month ago where it actually is a high wall. But sometimes it's just, you know, a dream. Then it says in verse 12, so famously, before destruction, the heart of man is haughty, but humility goes before honor. Now, you can do these two separately, and let's put them together today. A rich man's wealth is a strong city and like a high wall in his own imagination. While this man, if he's the kind that got it illicitly, he's the kind that's been doing it, you know, illegally and doing it for personal favor, and he's been withholding when it was due, and he was everything that Solomon would not have you be. Then, before destruction, the heart of a man is haughty, but humility goes before honor. Whether you have much or little, do not let it imprison you. Do not let it capture you. Do not let it shackle you. In this country, above all others, brethren, money is destroying so many people, so many of us, in the church, as well as out. Don't let that happen. So if you want to have more money, sure you do. Sure you do. I've been hunting for a house for 7 months in this area. I've seen some $600,000 houses I'd really like to live in. It never will. <You know? laughs> These are not the things to pursue. But if I had the money, I could write a check for it. I'd be in danger, wouldn't I? In jeopardy. Rich man, getting into the kingdom. Camels and needles here. Before destruction, the heart of man is lifted up. It's arrogant. It's proud. It's conceited. But humility goes before honor. So, impoverished, wealthy, tempted to give some money, or open-heartedly wanting to give a gift. There's this whole range here that Solomon has now painted for us in 5 weeks of study on money.